Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown co-host, along with Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Kel Carson, kind of silent partners now. We're all gobbling up and listening to the conversation going on here, making applications, I'm sure, Ed, in your head for innovations.
No, I'm just taking notes.
Ed is a tinkerer, and in his garage, I'm sure things are going on. Same thing with Cal as well. Jeff DeGraham with us. He is the Dean of Innovation, informal title, but professionally, he is the Professor of Management and Organizations at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. Now, we've been talking kind of generally about the notion of innovation, Jeff. I want to apply it, if we could, to two things that came out of CES and get a sense of where you think these things might go. And if they're really innovations, Intel at CES introduced something called the Curie module. It's a tiny little thing that essentially is a CPU, which is, the brain. Am I right? It's called the kind of the brain of the computer.
Well, it has a CPU in there. It's about the size of a dime or a nickel.
Yeah.
It's not very large at all.
Tiny. It has Bluetooth LE. It has a built-in accelerometer. And it has a gyroscope, so it can tell you about speed and about the height it has and where it is, essentially. The notion is that this coin-like little thing can be placed in just about anything and essentially turn the Internet of Things, anything, into a sentient being, in a sense, knowing where it is and what's going on. Do you think this is an innovation, true innovation, and where do you think it can go?
First of all, no, I don't. I don't think it's a. I think it's an innovation, but I think it's a relatively moderate, not a radical innovation. Mm-hmm. I think what it will drive will be a radical innovation. So let me see if I can separate the two things. Obviously, one of the things everybody talks about is the Internet of Things, where your washer talks to your dryer and your car talks to your thermostat at your house. And that is a foregone conclusion, and a lot of organizations have already built that in. In order for that to work, there has to be this kind of cascading, connect to everything, pervasive bit of technology. And there are some Uber aggregators out there. These are the Googles of the world and the Amazons and the Apples of the world and a handful of other companies people have never heard of that hold everything together. And that's what people mostly think about when they think about this kind of technology. But what I want people to think about is what this allows younger people to do, particularly millennials, who don't recognize institutions, who have opted out of institutions. It allows them to connect horizontally. So I want you to think about this for a minute. I want you to think about what technologies typically do is they make things go better, cheaper, and faster into the hub and spoke system that exists.
Okay.
But what if they allow you to go better, cheaper, faster outside of the hub and spoke system? What happens if you can opt out? Now, I want you to think about that. I'm not trying to be too radical here, but think about this. You know, one of the big things that goes on right now in finance is what's called flash trading, where people build black boxes and they're having high speeds and they're able to trade faster than you and I can trade. So what they get is they get to change the share price and they get to collect whatever the float that's left on that share price that you and I should have collected, right? This is how the rich get richer, right? This is what they do. But now I want you to imagine that people aren't trading stocks on the exchanges. I want you to imagine that people have handheld devices that are infinitely more sophisticated, faster, courtesy of Intel, than anything that we've got out there right now. And that, in fact, they can process data horizontally between each other and trade stocks between each other without going to any exchange. I want this is like Bitcoins.
I
want you to imagine that the more power you put in someone's hand, the more they don't have to be on the grid. So what people in my area are thinking about is they're thinking about how it all goes on the grid. Well, I want you to think about how it might not need to go to the grid. And that's both a very powerful thing because it's very freeing, but it's also a very scary thing because it allows a lot of places for people to create mischief in this world.
You know, it's interesting. We are going to be talking in the next hour. Rick Broyder is going to come on, our gadget guy. We're going to be talking about Sling TV, just named the best of CES. And it has a potential for doing that same thing of stepping outside of this whole, cable companies and network TVs and everything else and creating something that's absolutely different.
That's what that's the difference between boomers, my generation, and young people. I want to tell you something. I was recently on this think tank with Condoleezza Rice and Joe Coughlin of the MIT Age Lab. And it was really interesting because we were talking about retirement. So if you see the Prudential commercials where they put up the purple dots, that's the result of that. But one of the things that Coughlin laid out that was really interesting is he said in 2013, over half of all live births to women under the age of 30 are outside of marriage. Young people aren't marrying. The fastest growing religion in people under 30 in the United States, plus 18, is atheism. They don't believe in God. right? In general, I'm not saying, and I'm not trying to be judgmental. Third, when we ask them, the Pew Charitable Trust, what they want to do for a living, they don't want to come and work and make a lot of money. They want to be self-actualized. They want to, you know, they want to save the environment. They're what we call post-capitalist economy. So why is that important? Well, an old guy like me, you know, marriage, capitalism, and, you know, my belief system is pretty important to me.
Right.
They have opted out of a lot of institutions in a very fundamental way. They have a very horizontal view of the world. Right. This is very important. They don't see race the same way. They don't see orientation. They have wonderful values. This is not to be controversial or judgmental that way. This is to say you're looking at a group of people who have opted out of the vertical world. So their worldview is, how do we connect horizontally? Right. This is why when you look at who thought WikiLeaks was a good idea, they're all younger. Right. That's what most of the data says.
Yeah.
And those of us who are older thought this was a really bad thing. Right. We're very upset about it. So what's been interesting to me is these kinds of technologies, like what Intel has. Traditionally, people in my age group are thinking it's all going to make everything talk together. It's all going to be better. Our Facebook's going to talk to our refrigerator, and we're going to know whether we're out of granny's out of food. We need to go over to her house and feed her. Right. But for this other generation, I think it offers radical possibilities.
Wow. Fascinating. I'm looking at these two guys, Ed and Cal, who have children, I think, maybe in the millennial range.
Mm-hmm.
Ed, am I right on that in terms of when they were born, around the turn of the century?
Yeah, they were born in, what, 91, 93?
Okay. Would that be the millennials?
Millennials.
That's what we're talking about. And Cal, you've got a daughter who is 20-something.
Yeah, unfortunately, then? She's 25. But yeah, and I hear what he's talking about, and it really makes the world weird for us older guys, because it's like that whole Google approach. On our floor at work, they've redone that floor completely, and it used to be everyone would be in a cube, you'd have walls where you couldn't see each other, you did your business, and it was a vertical society, just like he says. Now, they went on, 3/4 of our floor has all glass cubes, you can see each other, they've taken out a third of all the cubes, and they put in what they call collaboration areas, where they go in and they sit on couches and high back tables.
Yeah, and they wear fuzzy slippers and couches.
They've got lava lights. They've got couches. It's just a
weird. We got the old timers here going on, don't we?
and it's a weird world. It is a very weird world,
old
because
man-itis.
You look at it and say, what the heck's going
on? Free
cookies
and pop, you know, come on.
Yeah.
And they all got ribbons. You got to add that one. That's what all old timers do. And they all got ribbons.
You know, Jeff, how do you teach these wildcats?
Well, that's why I built the lab. That's why I built the Innovatrium, because I think they have a lot to teach us. I think that their form of innovation is radically different than ours, in that it's more socially oriented, more value oriented, less goal oriented. Mm. There's always an upside and a downside. They're much more democratic than our age group. And there's a lot of research on this. Mm-hmm. Our age group is really meritocracy, really based on goals. We competed for everything. Their age group, it's a different world, and for good reason. They saw that the things that we built maybe are not lasting. You know, they're not particularly thrilled with the world that we've left them with, right?
I think we actually destroyed the world for them, because it's during the time that Gary came up, those were the times where, you know, you compete, you're in competition, you're first, second, third, and then that was it. You just, you know, you were done. These kids are coming up in a world where everyone gets a ribbon, everyone gets a medal, and it's just ridiculous. They don't taste it isn't the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. They've got everything is just in the middle.
But they're great, they're fluent in technology in the way that we are not, and they're going to use it in ways that we never thought about using.
Oh, man.
Right.
Folks, you have just heard the discussion that's on the cusp of the future.
We could do another two-hour show, man, on that alone.
Jeff DeGraff, thank you so much for being with us. It has been a ball having
Thanks for having me, everybody.
Thank you,
and
Jeff.
And by the way, you should go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, and when you see Dean of Innovation, right under there, Jeff's name is highlighted. Click on that, and it'll take you to his website, and you can find out much more about what he's involved in. Hey, there is a second of our 3 hours coming up, and in that one, we're going to be talking with Rick Broyd about some of the gadgets that came out of CES, and also with Paul Eisenstein about the upcoming North American International Auto Show. Two examples